This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
I believe in societal norms.
When the clock struck six, it meant one thing.
I'm going viral. Doesn't Warner know this?
I'm not even trying to compete with
okay.
that Lego.
Okay, good.
It was horrifying.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's Andrew Gundling.
You couldn't possibly understand the hurt.
Oh, that's right. Andrew Gundling in for Peter Rosenberg here tonight on a Monday on the Michael Kay Show. Michael, what's up? How are you?
Okay.
And Don LaGreca, how are you?
I think I'm saying this right, Peter. Stench in Mamaroneck. You're on ESPN New York. How are you, sir?
Oh, hey, no, it's Bennett.
Oh, poor Anthony. I know the feeling. We've all been there. It's sad. Very sad for Anthony.
Are you okay with the Eagles and the Phillies?
So, yes, I am okay because I've accepted that the Eagles are a bad team. And when you lower your expectations, you're not let down quite as hard. The Phillies, however, that was a disaster to end the season. All the things that they needed to have go right for them did.
Went right.
Except for them.
Right.
They lost seven of their last eight games. This was a nightmare season, and I'm glad that it's over.
It's a lot of money for a bad team.
I think I saw a stat, actually, about the Phillies where they had a lead in 41 or 42 of their 60 games, which was the third most of any team in baseball. However, they are incapable of holding leads, and that is why their season is over.
You know what your manager would say, right?
It is not at all what anybody in Philadelphia wanted. No.
Oh, yeah.
I think statistically also, I think it's the second worst bullpen in history behind only the 1930 Phillies.
And back then, the guys in the bullpen were terrible starters.
Right. These guys are specialists. They're paid to be doing this job, and they are completely incapable. So, yeah, this season was awful. Looks like it's going to be well, I'm going to hold you to that tie. Could always use a new tie.
Yeah, but you never answered me. I don't know if...
I did. I responded to the group text.
But not to the personal text.
I said it was a bad guy text message from you, but I will hold you to the tie.
All right.
See, Michael, you don't realize how important fandom is to people. And you think it's a joke that this is just fun. We're kind of making fun. Like, what are our picks? We can make fun of each other because we're not emotionally, like, tied to our picks the way that Andrew's tied to his favorite teams. So when you poke fun, you're hurting him more. What kind of friend is that?
That's the thing is, like, Michael doesn't have – like, I so badly wanted to respond with some kind of shot that I could take at him. But he doesn't have a fan relationship like this with any team. Like, I don't know what that – Yeah, so
you know what? Why don't you take a shot at my kids?
So if you have, oh my God! So if you have some, so if Michael has like a stock that loses money for a few days in a row or something, maybe should I send him a text message that says something like, "Hey, it looks like you might need to borrow some money."
You know, just the stock.
Yeah, there's one in particular that I think that should be it. Just right there, ready to fire off at any moment.
Right.
Yep.
Please go on.
All right. So I was going to start with football, but I think we'll follow what was kind of the breaking news from the last 30 minutes. And that was Woj with a Woj bomb that Doc Rivers is out with the Clippers. During his 7 years with LA, they had the fifth best record in the league, but they were just never able to break through that second round barrier. Zero appearances in the conference finals in some years where they probably should have, especially this year. Aside from that.
Remember, he had prime Lob City, too.
He had prime Lob City, and I mean, Kawhi, Paul George, and the reigning sixth man of the year, and Lou Williams, and then this year's sixth man with Montrezl Harrell. Like, I don't know. That just, it was all there for them. I mean, the Nuggets are good, but the Clippers probably are the better team on paper, and he couldn't bring it out in them. Aside from just Doc Rivers being out, there are now around the league some really, really fascinating head coaching vacancies. You've got the Clippers, Rockets, Thunder, Pacers, Sixers, and Pelicans. All of them are playoff teams from this past year, except one, New Orleans, wasn't a playoff team, but they may be the most appealing job of them all with Zion Williamson. So there are some really interesting holes to be filled right now around
the
league.
And I really believe that the Knicks did the right thing striking early because they were one of the delete eight. They were able to start this before anybody else. And they got a great coach. They didn't get a good coach. They got a great coach. And if they had waited and all these positions opened up, as I said, I wonder if Thibodeau in a quiet moment regrets signing that soon. But the Knicks struck early and did the right thing. And all of those, the best job there, I think, the one that's closest to a championship is the Clippers. But remember, Kawhi Leonard came to the Clippers because he wanted to play for Doc Rivers. He can opt out after next year. So the two people that Woj is saying are considered are Ty Lue, who's already on the staff, and then Jeff Van Gundy, who's very close with Lawrence Frank. So that'd be a great job for Jeff Van Gundy. He's waited, and this would be a team that's expected to win a title. I'm intrigued to see who's going to get that job.
Yeah, that's of those openings, that's probably the most interesting one, because they are, I think you'd have to say, compared to those other teams, they're the most title ready. But
and you're going to get paid the most because the owner's filthy rich.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That too. And it's not, of course, head coaching is not salary capped. So,
right.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see some football. The game of the year, I think you could make an argument. I know it's only week three, but Ravens and Chiefs are probably most people's number one and number two in the NFL right now. Mahomes against Jackson. It's the first ever matchup between two former MVPs, age 25 and younger. They were 1-2 in total QBR last year. I don't know. I know sometimes we're a little quick to do this type of thing, but Mahomes, Jackson, you just wonder if this is like the next generation, you know, Magic and Bird, Brady and Manning. These two are so young, and they already have MVPs. One of them already has a Super Bowl. The other one is considered a favorite to get one. This could be a fun rivalry within conference, so you'll get playoff matchups, I would think, between them over the next several years. This could be the next big thing in the NFL.
The only thing I worry about with this matchup, and I wonder if Don agrees with me, the style of play of Jackson is conducive to getting hurt. I mean, they run him a lot. And I don't know if he's going to have a long enough career to be, you know, the Brady to Mahomes' Manning. I just don't know. I mean, I hope he stays healthy for the next 15 years, but he gets hit a lot. And as he gets older, it's going to hurt more.
Right. And as he gets older, then that skill will diminish. And
right.
Then you could have like another Cam Newton situation where, you know, he's trying to hang on and going someplace else and trying to win. But right now, for the sheer enjoyment, what a matchup tonight. It won't win the face off for me, but I'll be watching when I can.
Yeah.
Do you have two TVs side by side, though? Can you do that?
I do not have that, no.
Well, you could always pull one up on an iPad or a computer.
Oh, that's what I do. I'll be engaged in both, but I'll be a little bit more engaged in the hockey, but I will be watching the football. Plus, this is my two-point play. I got to get the 3 points.
That's right. 3.5 tonight, right? Chiefs are getting 3.5?
Getting 3.5. So is this similar to Rodgers getting 3.5?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. I almost took this game. I hope you lose.
No, I get that. I was rooting for the Saints last night.
Yeah, of course.
You were definitely rooting for the Rams.
That was such a bogus pass interference. Andrew, help me out.
Yeah, it was. And I saw the Rams were furious about it after the game, and justifiably so. I don't know. Maybe pass interference should still be a challengeable play.
Don't you feel like, serious, I said this to somebody yesterday. It's almost as if the NFL's throwing flags galore on incompletions. That they're almost saying, oh, you didn't want us to do the challenge now, so there you go. Because they're throwing flags all over the place. There's flags. Tell me, Andrew, after an incompletion, are you not holding your breath that there's a flag?
Any ball that's thrown 25 yards or more downfield, your first instinct, if it's incomplete, is to look in the bottom right to see if that little yellow ticker comes up that says flag single time.
I'm pumping my fist. Incompletion, game over.
Okay, you know, loses.
They blow a 28-3 lead. I thought it was over. I wasn't even paying attention until I'm looking at the bottom line. All of a sudden, I'm seeing the Rams score. I'm like, oh, Michael's got his three in his pocket. Now he's going to lose the three. It falls incomplete. The Rams are celebrating. Oh, flag.
Sad.
Now, you know, though, overall, I was reading that penalties in the NFL are down significantly at this point this season as to where they were last season. So I think most people would.
I don't think that particular. The pass interference has got to be up, though. It seems like there's a lot more pass interference. I can't speak to the other penalties.
Well, the big one that's down is holding. They're not calling. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not happening at the same rate. But for whatever reason, NFL referees right now are not calling offensive holding penalties, which is probably also why scores are up. I would guess that has something to do with it. Let's see. The Chiefs and Ravens, that is the good. The Jets and Giants, as we've been talking about, is the bad. The question is how bad? Listen to what Keyshawn Johnson said earlier today on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin.
It's just painful to watch the New York Jets play. I mean, do you think about it? They got a chance to maybe go 0-16.
Both, you're saying.
But I was going to get to the Giants on the other side. The other side may go 0-16, too. When you look at those teams, I was like, just watching both of them yesterday, the 49ers, they don't even have a 53 people they can put out on the field healthy. And you get that done to you? I mean, it's just like in their frontline guys are not even healthy. Like the top dudes that they had on the Super Bowl team last year are not even healthy. And they got that done to them in their own stadium with no fans. The Jets, I can't even, Adam Gase should ask to be fired. He should just resign.
Aggressive.
Do you guys really believe that 0-16 is on the table?
No.
No. No. Almost impossible to do. But you're going to run into a win.
And the Giants, as bad as they were yesterday, they almost beat the Bears. So they will play teams that are worse than the Bears. I don't know what the Redskins are. They've got problems at quarterback.
They're not the Redskins. Stop it.
I'm sorry. All right? But historically, they were the Redskins. They've had the Redskins number. Now, will they have the number of the Washington football team? That's the question. But they had the Redskins number.
Well played, Don.
Here is, I saw this yesterday. Here's what the 49ers were missing. Their number one quarterback, their number one running back, their number two running back, their number one tight end, their number two tight end, their number one wide receiver, their number one cornerback, their number two cornerback, their number four cornerback, their number one defensive end, number three defensive end, number four defensive end, number five defensive end, second linebacker, fourth wide receiver, fifth wide receiver, and their number one center.
Wait, did you
have the team?
Are you reading that, or do you have that committed to memory?
No. I'm reading it. I can't lie to you. The camera's staring right at me.
That was incredible.
That is what they were missing, and that was from NFL reporter Dove Kleiman. They wiped the floor with the Giants. Wiped the floor with them. So, but 0-16, Andrew. That it just can't happen. But I wouldn't be surprised if these teams are both like 3-13, 2-14.
Oh man. Ugly. Very, very ugly. A couple other NFL observations from over the weekend. I mentioned the previous two MVPs in Jackson and Mahomes meeting tonight. Are we looking at the next one right now in Russell Wilson? 14 touchdown passes through three games. That breaks Mahomes' record from 2 years ago.
Isn't it amazing that it's become public now? I never knew it until this season that this guy's never received one MVP vote. Not one. He's been a really good player. He's been a great player. One MVP vote? Not one?
I don't know if you were watching, but last weekend, did you hear what Chris Collinsworth said about that?
Yeah, he messed it up.
He said he would have been the vote for Russell Wilson, but I guess he has a vote, but 1 year he just didn't get his ballot in, so they took his vote away from him. And he said he would have voted for Russell Wilson. So that stat would have been nullified. But yeah, to this point, you're right. Never one MVP vote for him.
You know, when you look at the times when they went to the Super Bowl, he was looked upon as like a borderline passenger because they were so led by their defense that it wasn't to the level of like Baltimore days, but it was where, he's a really good quarterback, but that defense. Now, all those pieces of the defense are gone. Their defense is, I don't know what it is statistically, but it's not great anymore.
No.
You could score on that defense, and yet they're still winning games. Why? Because of him. So he is really showing how important he was to those teams in the past because he's anything but a passenger. He's going to go down as good as any of these quarterbacks going right now.
Yeah, and we talk about quarterbacks who can make the pieces around them better. I mean, his receivers, Tyler Lockett was kind of a mid-round draft pick. DK Metcalf looks like he's going to be one of the best receivers in the league. He was a second-round pick and not not super highly rated. So Russell Wilson, I'm not saying those guys aren't good in their own right, but Russell Wilson is, he's unbelievable. And he makes everyone around him better. The Falcons currently 0-3. Their season is more than likely over, which is horrifying when you think about how it's gone. Don, this is a stat that you mentioned earlier. The Falcons became the first team in NFL history to lose twice in one season while holding a 15-plus point lead in the fourth quarter. That's according to Elias. They've done it in back-to-back weeks. 16-point lead against the Bears, and of course the unfathomable loss they had against Dallas the week before that. So
for all the analytic people out there, that there's no such thing as clutch and pressure and all that, you can't tell me that one doesn't have something to do with the other. Like, they weren't thinking about that in the fourth quarter as the lead was whittling away. Like, I got to think that's not coincidence. That's got to play on you mentally. So they got
to play on the
right
coach.
Now.
You don't think the coach, every game he has a lead, is thinking 28-3? Biggest game of his life, they blew it?
Well, now it's becoming, you pulled the Falcon, right? I mean, that's probably, is that to the level we're getting now? Every time a team blows a lead, you pull the Falcon?
It kind of is. It was Nick Foles who led the comeback in his quest to be just the most confusing player in NFL history. Nick Foles' old team, the Eagles, had another terrible day. They tied the Bengals 23-23. Let me just ask you, because Doug Peterson is getting destroyed in Philadelphia today. So you're getting ready to attempt a 59-yard field goal on 4th and 7, 19 seconds left in overtime. You get an unbelievable false start penalty, which moves you back 5 yards to the 46. So now it's a 64-yard field goal. So you have three options. Which do you do here? 64-yard field goal, leave your offense on the field and go for it on 4th and 12, or punt and essentially concede the tie.
How many timeouts do you have?
The Eagles had no timeouts left.
Well, then I probably would punt, because they're going to take away the sidelines and then they're going to take over at the 46. And then they have one completed pass and they could go for the win. So I probably would go for the tie.
The only question I would have for you, Michael, sorry, Don, you don't think 19 seconds, if you do go for it, you can still use the middle of the field, spike it, and then get a shorter field goal off in time? I would think that's on the table.
Well, I would say a competent team could do that. So
It's not killable. Let's face it, because if you try the field goal, and I know he made a 63-yarder against the Giants a couple of years ago, but it's still, I think that would have tied the record, if not broken the record. So the chances are slim. And plus, they get it from the spot of the kick, so all Cincinnati has to do is one quick completion for 10 yards, and they're attempting a long field goal to win the game. So that's not easy to do. 4th and 12, that's tough, too, because you're now giving Cincinnati the ball back with at least 10 seconds left, and I believe they had a timeout or two, so they could have ran two plays to try to get in the field goal range. You can't kill them for that. What I would have killed them for is just the really lack of aggression on 1st and 2nd down when they got down there. It's like they had no faith in Carson at all.
There's actually somebody in our station, I'm not going to give a name because that's not what I do, that said it's better to lose than tie. I've never heard such a statement.
I'm going to tell you,
statement.
It's John Winthrop, because he said it to me, and I don't care, because he should own that ridiculous, moronic statement. So you're telling me that Philadelphia would rather lose the game and hurt their chances. It's still a tie is better than a loss.
So in 2008, the Eagles ironically tied the Bengals. It was the game where Donovan McNabb famously thought there was a second overtime and was made to look foolish because there wasn't. And I remember the same thing. The Bengals were awful. The Eagles were underachieving. And it was the same outrage. Oh, the Eagles are terrible. They should have just lost the game. The season's over. And they went on a run after that. And they wound up going 9-6-1. Had they lost the game, they would have gone 9-7. They would have missed the playoffs. At 9-6-1, they got in and they made a run to the NFC Championship game. And they were a minute away from going to the Super Bowl until the Cardinals scored on their last drive. So,
All you have to do is tell Winthrop, a tie is like kissing your sister, and a loss is like getting stabbed by your sister.
Well, no, but I've had an argument. We actually got into it in the newsroom about that. I'd just rather lose. That's stupid. Why would you rather lose? A tie is better than a loss. It makes no sense. Matter of fact, I can't even imagine if he could take his Mickey Mouse ears off for 2 seconds and call us, he would not be able to defend himself.
Ties like kissing your sister.
I'd never.
If she's hot.
You know what I'm saying, Andrew? Makes zero sense. That tie is going to help them more than a loss ever could. Nobody ever said, thank God we lost that game. Otherwise, we would have missed the playoffs.
This guy's in a management position on our station.
And look, for whatever you think of the Eagles and the tie, they were the only NFC East team that didn't lose on Sunday.
Oh, so they're right
Cowboys,
there.
Cowboys, well, I mean, look, they're bad, and they're not winning. I can't see more than five, maybe six wins on this
That might
schedule,
win them the actually, division.
They actually have the hardest strength of schedule remaining in the NFL, and the Cowboys have the easiest. But so the NFC East now, with the Cowboys, Giants, and Washington all losing and the Eagles tying, they went 0-3-1 in week three. The division as a whole is 2-9-1 this season. It's the third worst record by any division through 3 weeks since 1970.
There will be a team with a losing record getting in. They will win the division like the Seahawks all those years ago.
No, because first of all, the Cowboys are good, right? They could have very easily been 0-3, but they're the best team in the division. And as Andrew said, with an easy schedule, they'll rattle off 8-9 wins before it's over.
Because if nothing else, Don, they will. Maybe they're not good enough to beat the Seattles and those teams of the world, but they will beat up on the rest of this division once they get into the division.
Yeah, they're going to go 6-0 in the division.
Right.
So that's seven wins counting the one they already have. And, they're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Let's see, guys. Joe Montana, hero on the field, hero off of it, as he and his wife amazingly blocked an attempted kidnapping of their grandchild. Reading here, the Hall of Fame quarterback and his wife confronted an intruder who attempted to kidnap the 9-month-old child, officials confirmed on Sunday. According to the L.A. County Sheriff's Department, Montana said his grandchild was sleeping in a playpen Saturday when an unknown woman entered the home and grabbed the child. Montana and his wife, Jennifer, confronted the woman. They tried to, quote, de-escalate the situation and asked her to give back their grandchild. Then, when the intruder didn't comply, a tussle ensued, and Jennifer Montana pried the child back.
There's a lot of really weird things going on, because the story I read is that she took the baby out of the playpen, then walked up the steps and confronted the Montanas. So I don't understand what was going on there. Why would she walk up the steps? If Joe and his wife were upstairs, the baby was downstairs. So if she wanted to kidnap the baby and she had the baby, wouldn't she just leave the house instead of walking upstairs?
Yeah, so what?
I don't know what's going on.
It's like, I really want this baby, but I'd love to get Joe's autograph.
No, let me see the top of the house. Let me see if there's I want to see the rest of the house.
We're not talking about somebody that's mentally stable, Michael, so I don't know how we could even have a serious conversation about what was going on through her mind there, but God, it's incredible.
Yeah, unbelievable how frightening that situation must have been.
Don't people lock their doors, though, in the Bay Area?
Well, maybe the story I read wasn't as detailed as the one you read. Did it say what time of day this happened? I think it was
daylight, I know.
All right.
I believe,
so maybe, I don't know, but not, I mean, during the day, we don't always lock our front door.
Oh, my God, I deadbolt everything. Nobody's getting in.
Michael's having a moat constructed around his
If I could, I would. I'd put piranhas in there. But then I wouldn't get my FedEx deliveries.
Who's robbing you there?
People get robbed.
I don't think so. I think anybody with a criminal record crosses the border to your town, like an alarm goes off.
Really? Okay. I'll play along. I'll give you a list.
All right. You know Andrew, right?
I mean, I'm not going to say there's. Yeah, Don. Essentially, Don is right. I think the crime statistics where you are, I think, are very, very low. I think you can leave the door unlocked during daylight.
No, but deadbolt.
All right.
I mean, there's somebody on death row right now for touching somebody's volleyball in the backyard in the town that you live right now.
Mm-hmm. And they should be punished.
Oh, yeah. Let's see, guys. NBA Finals are set. Lakers Heat, LeBron's current team against his former team. Much of the story here, of course, is going to be about LeBron leading another team to the finals. But I don't know. I've kind of been thinking more about the Heat being in this position.
Amazing story.
It is. So for an organization, when a superstar leaves, this does not happen. LeBron left 6 years ago. He left Miami. And that wasn't even really just LeBron. It was, I mean, Bosh and Wade stayed, but then they both eventually left. Wade came back.
Well, Bosh couldn't play anymore.
Right, but it was really the breakup, not just of one superstar leaving, but of the big three essentially disbanding. I mean, there is not really another scenario that I can think of where a player of that kind of significance like LeBron left a team, and then within 6 years, that team was completely remade again and then back in the NBA Finals.
He's a better GM than he is a coach, and he was a Hall of Fame coach. Riley's amazing. And how much do you think he wants to beat LeBron? He was not happy that LeBron left.
Yeah.
Because LeBron got everything he wanted in Miami, everything. And then he just up and left and went back to Cleveland, I guess because he thought it was unfinished business. Spoelstra knows every weakness that LeBron has. So does Riley. I still think that the Lakers will win, but I don't think it's going to be as easy as people make it out to be.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you. I know Riley, I feel like whenever we have this conversation, I'm doing ENN, and I feel like it's always left to me to say that I'm glad you brought up Spoelstra, because Riley does take a ton of credit, but I really think Spoelstra is like quietly one of the two, maybe three best coaches in the NBA, and his name is not brought up nearly enough for it. For him to be able to unlock this in Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero, like now it's easy to look at those guys and say, well, yeah, they have talent, they're good. But most coaches don't even get chances to show what they have. So I think Spoelstra deserves a ton of credit for getting this out of this team.
There's a story out today, Duncan Robinson. Where did he go? Did he go to
Michigan?
Michigan. Okay, so in the last year in Michigan, he knew that his career was over. So he was like sending out feelers to media companies, and he talked with somebody from The Ringer.
I saw it. Mark Titus, who hosts a podcast, and he was a former walk-on at Ohio State, and he became a contributor at The Ringer. He does a podcast. And yeah, he posted the text message that Duncan Robinson sent him, basically saying, hey, I'd love to chat about how I can kind of like follow in your footsteps and get into this career. Now,
and they chatted for an hour and a half, and you know, pretty much Duncan Robinson said, listen, it's not this is it for my basketball career, so I want to know where to go after that. And here he is going to the NBA Finals.
Amazing.
Great story.
Yeah. And then Stanley Cup Final could all end tonight. Tampa leads the series 3-2. After Dallas stayed alive thanks to a double overtime winner from Corey Perry. This was after friend of the show, Kevin Shattenkirk, played the role of hero in Game 5 with an OT winner of his own. Don, I wanted to ask you about this because I was watching Game 5 and it seemed like, I mean, I was happy for Kevin Shattenkirk to score. He's such a good guy. But there was a lot of controversy just from watching the game, people on Twitter.
Oh.
The goal came on a power play, but should they have even been on a power play?
Well, here's what happened, Michael, and I wonder if you can find an analogy in another sport, because I'm trying to dig for one, maybe one in football, all right? I forget who it was on the Lightning. Might have been Tyler Johnson. I don't remember. Somebody will correct me. Ben hits him like on the shoulder, kind of pulls him down, and he falls backwards. The official calls a penalty and then shows a kicking motion saying, you slew-footed him, and the penalty was a trip. But clearly, replay showed he never tripped him. So he got the call wrong. However, you could make the case what Ben did was still a holding penalty. So the official's getting killed because he called the wrong penalty, so he saw it wrong. But I think if he had called it a holding penalty, Andrew, I don't think people would be as up in arms about it. So I'm trying to find another analogy, like in another sport, where it would be like there's pass interference, but they call a defensive hold. And, oh, he didn't know what he's doing. There was no holding, but there was another penalty. So I didn't have a problem with them being on the power play because I still think a penalty was committed. But he completely got it wrong. He didn't. He saw something that didn't happen.
Yeah.
He didn't kick his leg out from under him, which would be a slew foot.
It's one of the great calls of all time. It's one of the great names of anything.
Slew foot is great.
Slew foot.
But to defend the official, you can kind of see it, right, Andrew? Like, I don't know if you saw it.
Yeah, I was watching it, and I agreed with you because you and I actually texted after it in real time. It did look like a penalty happened, and I guess what you're saying is that one did, just not the one that the referee, that the official called.
Right, and then you get into the whole, well, it's overtime, you should let them play. Fact is that their penalty kill was brutal, and Tampa took advantage of it. And I was happy for Shattenkirk because the game-tying goal bounced off of him into the net. So it was great vindication, but good job out of Tampa. They fight back. They win in overtime on Friday, and now they set on Saturday night, and now they set up a game six. And if tell me you're not rooting for that, Andrew. Get a Dallas win tonight. Get game seven thrown on top of all that sports stuff going on Wednesday. It's going to be amazing.
I know. It really will. The hard part will be trying to prioritize what the primary viewing would wind up being for that.
Well, I mean, obviously, and not everything's happening at the same time, but you're going to get a lot happening at the same time. I mean, you're a basketball fan, so you're going to prioritize Heat, Lakers more than I would. But I just think a Game 7 so attractive, deciding a championship, that even like non-hockey fans might check that out. And there's going to be a ton on national television, right? ABC is going to have the basketball. NBC is going to have the hockey. The baseball is going to be – they're all going to be available. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah. Yep. And then one last
We should all make a selection for all 10 games if it happens. And
I like the way you think.
You like that?
Yeah.
Maybe we listen, if Dallas wins, but even if they don't, even if it's just the nine games, we'll make a selection tomorrow.
Yeah, but eight of the games are baseball. Peter doesn't have any idea.
Well, then that's a disadvantage to him, and he'll lose. I'm comfortable with that.
Okay.
One last note for Ranger fans. Mark Stahl was traded to Detroit over the weekend, 13 years as a Ranger, his whole career, two-time All-Star. So a good career with the Rangers. I would think most fans would wish him well. I think he was a pretty well-liked player here.
He was such a good guy. Michael, you probably have him on the Yankees where despite the loss, he still talks. He's nice to you on the bus and the plane. Like, I'm going to miss him. 13 years he was here, draft pick of the Rangers.
It's the worst thing about a sport with a cap. The only reason he's gone is because they need to free up that $5 million.
But think about it, Michael. The good job out of the Rangers. They enticed Detroit to take him.
Gave him a second round
pick. They free up $5.7 million. It sounds like within the next few days they'll buy out Hank. They'll have $23 million of cap space to sign all their restricted free agents. So they'll be able to bring Georgiev back. And they might actually have some room to be competitive in free agency or maybe make a trade. So you hate to see them go, but that's a shrewd move by them.
Yep. Well, there you go. That's ENN for tonight.
Great job.
Right, John? Honestly.
He really should take this job over from Peter. Let Peter just be part of it like we are.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.